It's recording. All right. So today is June 16th, Saturday. I'm Dominic Mores, PhD student here at UT Austin at the H.J. Lutcher Stark Center for Physical Culture and Sports, part of the 1968 U.S. Olympic Team Oral History Project. I'm interviewing Mr. Steve Hug over the phone about his experiences at the 1968 Olympic Games in Mexico City. Awesome. Well, Mr. Hug, first of all, thank you so much for your time and letting us talk with you and everything, and just, you know, giving us some of your time. Can I just start off with, I've looked at your bio, but for the purposes of the interview, where you're from and just kind of, you know, your first experiences leading up to how you got involved in the gymnastics.
Well, I was born in Illinois, but basically I grew up in Los Angeles in the San Fernando Valley from age six, which was 1958. And, you know, I wasn't very good at sports. I wasn't that big, so I couldn't, you know, I wouldn't be football, last picked on the team. Little league, coach's sons got to play the best positions, couldn't run that fast. But one day when I was doing one of these things, it was like flag football, I think, for Indian guys. One of the kids said, "Hey, come over, let me show you something." And they have the bars out on the junior, you know, the junior high schools where we have these little flag football games.
Right, right.
He showed me hang on his knees and he landed on his feet. And I thought, well, that's really neat. That's like your own little amusement park ride. So I tried and knocked the wind out of myself, landed on my stomach. Next week, came back for the next thing, and I said, "Look, I got it." And I said, I was 10 years old. I figured that was it. That's your own. And he said, "Oh, yeah, but watch this now." And he sat on top of the bar and flipped over. And I said, there's more to do than just one trick. And so I just started doing, going to the, I'd walk to the junior high school. One of my friend's fathers spot us on back handsprings on the lawn. I used to walk on my hands. And then when I was 12, I saw, there was one guy actually at the junior high school who kind of took me in the gym and showed me that it actually was a sport. So I was aware that it was a sport. And then they had the 1964 Olympic trials at Valley State College, which was right in Northridge, right, real close to where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over and watched it. And I thought to myself, wow, maybe one day I would be able to do this. So I started going to, you know, these little competitions. We have these age group things in the Valley. And the public school system had a pretty strong gymnastics program at the time.
Okay.
Through the 60s. The L.A. City High School was big. Our junior high school that I went to, you know, is now in junior high school. They had a gymnastics. We had four gymnastics teams there. We'd compete with each other, did exhibitions at, you know, school, you know, recess and
right.
like that. And one of the guys who was on the 68 Olympic team saw me, and he was judging one of these meets. And went to my parents and said, "I think, you know, it was Art Sherlock who was in the 64 Olympic team." And he said, "You know, I think your son could be good. Why don't you bring him to UCLA?" So my mother would drive me to UCLA on Saturday, and he'd teach me for, you know, an hour. I think he'd charge $15 or something, you know. And he taught me some things. And there was a guy named Rusty Rock who, you know, was at Cal State Northridge. They called it Valley State College then, that mm-hmm. used to drive me to Valley Junior College. And then you know, I started doing pretty well in these competitions, actually. And when I was 14, I went to my first national competition in Louisiana. And I did pretty good. I placed in 20th place. And then back then, it was just, there was one division. There was no age groups
okay.
back in EDU. Competing as one, it was like 20th place or 20th in the country. That's it. And then I made it to the Pan American Trials. Top 20 got to go. And so I went there and didn't do very well. So I was kind of discouraged, and I told my friend Dave Thor, who was also in the 64 Olympic team, I said, "Look, I probably should just, you know, wait for the next Olympic team because I'm no way." You know, I was feeling sorry for myself for screwing up so bad. And he goes, No, you got to show your, you got to keep going because, you know, you'll go to these trials and they'll know who you are. Then by the next time, you'll know it. And then a couple months later, they had the pre-Olympic trials. And I was 15 years old at the time, and
mm-hmm.
and I actually won the competition.
Oh, wow.
I came in first place and got to go there. So I was kind of on my way then. And of course, the following year I made it when I was 16.
How was that? I mean, you know, now we think of people, you know, being that young, and that's a lot of pressure. I mean, did you feel a lot of pressure being so young like that, or did you still have elements of childhood within that? How did that work?
I thought it was the greatest thing ever, man. I had friends who were older than me that, you know, that would take me to places, you know, that I could, you know, it was awesome.
Right. So, a lot of your friends then were doing gymnastics and stuff too?
Yeah, my friends, most of my friends were older. Like, they'd drive me to the gym. A lot of these friends I still have today, actually. But, I thought it was great that for women are younger, but men aren't that younger, much younger. I mean, I still am the youngest male gymnast for the United States ever to compete in the Olympics.
Right.
There hasn't been any other 16-year-olds since me.
That's incredible. So, one more question.
That was great. I mean, I had to miss 6 weeks of school when I went to Mexico. And, all the other guys on the team back then were out of college. Mm. Had kids and family and stuff. And I would say I was in the 10th grade. I got to miss 6 weeks of school. That was the greatest thing. I got to go down to Mexico and hang out with these guys who were college kids and, all of my other friends were listening there in history class.
Yeah.
How lucky is that?
that's a high schooler's dream, really.
That's right. It sure was.
So how was it then? I mean, we're talking about hanging out with the older folks. I mean, how was it then in the Olympic Village with you being the youngest kid there?
It was great, man. I had a blast. I actually was the youngest kid there. I was the youngest. I'm pretty sure I was the youngest. From what I understand, I was the youngest male athlete from any country, any sport in Mexico.
Huh. Wow.
That's what I've been told. I don't know how to check any statistics on that, but that's what I've been told.
So what?
Back then, all other sports were especially older. I mean, we're talking almost 50 years ago, right?
Right. Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, it's still incredible. I mean, I agree with that. 16 years old, that's, oh, man, that would be a
that
real
was a
fun
blast,
time.
Man. I was like, wow.
And so,
it'd be better.
Right. Did you, so basically before, or during the year before the Olympics, I mean, you were just going to school and then going to train, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Huh. So, can you describe the Olympic trials a little bit, just kind of, did you face many challenges or just, you know, any kind of explain the process, how that went for you?
Well, the trials were, the first trials were in Louisiana, actually. It was in Louisiana again the following year, I think it was. And they picked the top 20, and I forgot what I was placed, but we trained there for 2 weeks. And then the second trials were at Penn State, and I actually got sick. I got the measles. A lot of guys were getting this German measles or something, so I didn't even get to compete, but they let me compete in the final trials. And the final trials, they picked 8 guys to compete. And actually, I was told later on that they said don't give this guy a score because he's too young to be on an Olympic team.
Oh, wow.
That's what. And so I got, I think I, the scoring was not very good because I was in 8th place. But I came in, I almost tied for 2nd place on the American team. I was a half a tenth below the 3rd place, the 2nd place guy. So I was in 3rd. So I beat all the other guys, really. But, I just had more energy than the rest of those guys. I just trained twice as hard.
Wow.
It was effortless for me. It never was work for me. I loved doing it I think that's what talent really is passion. And if you really love something, you're going to try harder than the guy who doesn't really love it.
That makes a lot of sense to me. So you said that, are there the kind of politics then in the scoring? I mean, I don't know enough.
In gymnastics?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't
really, especially and back then, especially in the Mexico Olympics, communism was pretty alive back then.
Mm-hmm.
Russia, Czechoslovakia, Romania, Bulgaria, you know, Yugoslavia, all those countries stuck together. So to beat any, they all got overscored in every event. So there was no chance we could medal. There's no way we could do it. But I that was the first thing I learned. I saw the guy who was the defending world champion. He won the world championships in 76. And we did basically the same difficulty in Florida, and I did it better than he did. And he got a 9.7, I got a 9.4. And I thought, well, if I'm going to look at the scores to judge my happiness and degree of how well I did, you know, I'll never be happy. Mm-hmm. Just don't even look at the scores in these international competitions, because they're never fair. And they weren't fair my whole career. There was no way, you know, we could medal. I mean, I was lucky because in the following Olympics, in the 72 Olympics, I was the first American to make finals. I made all-around finals. So I think I feel like I helped pave the way to get American gymnasts into the finals anyway.
Oh, wow.
That was the first guy to get in the finals. Hey, see you later, George. Have a good weekend. Yeah, sorry about that.
No problem. Yeah. Oh, wow, that is... I didn't know that was so prevalent in...
It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. And the Japanese probably got underscored on every event by like 3/10. Russians got overscored every event. And the Japanese still, you know, won by easily because they were just that much better.
Wow.
They were so far much better.
Huh. So... What about, did you have a lot of support from, like, a hometown, or how did your, did you have any kind of community support at all when you went off?
Oh, yeah. You know, my school, you know, my friends, you know, I mean, it was like a big family. I'll tell you, it's such a strong family, you know, because the world in general was smaller then, I mean, you know, than it is now, I mean... And the gymnastic community was like a world family. And where I still talk to a lot of friends that I competed with back then.
Hmm. That's awesome to have.
In fact, three of us, there was one guy, so what happened was is they had to kick somebody. So there was a lot of controversy because the coaches had to kick two guys off the team. I was eighth place, but I was better than, you know, I was third guy on the team. And in the following year, I won the national, so I beat everybody. The next year, I was 17. But so they had to kick somebody off, and it wasn't going to be me because I was better, and they knew that. So they had to pick some reason. So one of the guys hired the team car and to go out with his ex-wife or something. And it was an excuse to kick him out. And another guy got hurt, so they didn't have to do any. That was their criteria for picking who gets kicked off.
That made it easy.
I'm gonna see that guy who got that guy was my roommate who got kicked off the team. He made the 72 Olympic team, by the way, later. But I'm gonna see him, and I talked to him on the phone yesterday, in fact. And like another guy who was the number one guy in the team, I talked to him also. We're all going to go meet at the Olympic trials in the end of the month.
Oh, wow. So you'll have your own little
fraternity. You know, the dinosaurs are getting back together. Yeah, pretty cool. You know, that's the way it was back then. I mean, I even see, you know, guys from Russia or Japan that I knew back then. And I'll see them, you know, at these international competitions. And we... Hi, how you doing? You know, we still remember each other.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's pretty neat.
Yeah, so you bring that up, knowing got people from other teams. We're kind of wondering, you know, what type of interactions did you have with other teams at the games, specifically, you know, the Soviets, seeing as they were, you know, such a powerhouse at the time in a lot of sports?
In Mexico, the Soviets, not so much did I talk to them. I mean, I remember the gymnastics, you know, they're under a lot of pressure because that's their livelihood and stuff. And then, you know, but a few years later, some years later, actually, I was on a tour with them in Japan. And it was 3 weeks. So we hung out together and, you know, and drank together and stuff like that. But, you know, I got to know the Japanese guys actually pretty well. I actually traded my warm-up sweatsuit with... the guy who won the all-around in Mexico. I still have it.
Really?
Yeah, there's a Nippon on there, the red thing. That is like my prized possession, man.
That's awesome. I mean, that's really cool. Kind of like how soccer, they trade jerseys. Y'all traded sweats and stuff. That's really, really
cool.
Yeah,
man. Yep.
What about because we can look back in hindsight and know about the East Germans and their doping regime and everything. Did you have many interactions with them?
East Germans?
Yes, sir.
No.
Okay.
No, we really didn't talk too much to the communist guys, really.
Mm-hmm. Just by choice, or was it kind of...
I mean, you know, it's like you're something like that where you're there, you know, when we had the Olympic Village, we all had our separate, you know, buildings to be in and everything, you know, like they were in a different building, you know, than we were, and so we'd walk around and see them, but, you know, we didn't really talk much because that was that, but, you know, I mean, not so much. I'll tell you, though, one thing though about Mexico that was... better than, because I went to Munich also later. The one thing Mexico had was it was really the spirit of between the athletes. I mean, the judging wasn't fair, but so what? You know, there was no money involved, I mean, for us. So it was purely doing it for the love of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really had that feeling of athletes or just people getting together from different countries and, you know, sharing what they did. You know, we've been working on these tricks, you've been doing that stuff. It wasn't just, tennis is a little different because it's not just who's the fastest or who's the, you know, it's not simply by the number, by the points. It's like, it's more of an artistic sport.
Because,
you know, different guys are doing different tricks from different parts of the world. And we would say, wow, look at what those guys are doing. Look what this guy from Italy did on the floor. Or look what the guy from, Russian guy on the high bar or something. You know, we'd see different things and we'd get that sharing of culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was really alive. And we'd go into training and you'd see that. We'd work together, work out, and everybody was at least polite to each other. And, the pressure of, like, you know, financial pressure wasn't there.
Oh.
We did well. We're not going to get a dime.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't about that and where it is now. And so
that's refreshing.
And it wasn't really the endorsements and all that kind of stuff so much as there was. And 72 just totally changed.
Hmm.
72 was just a whole different thing. I think that the spirit was gone.
Really?
You know, the first Olympics is for people from other countries to get together and share culture and share their, you know, life experience, and, you know, bring culture together, leave the politics at home.
Right.
And that happened between the athletes. It didn't happen in the judging in gymnastics because of the communist guys, but that didn't really affect us as, you know, we weren't going to get any money anyway, so what the heck?
Mm-hmm.
We all knew who did. I mean, the Japanese guys knew, you know, if I was how good I was. Well, they didn't care what some old man giving putting up numbers thought. That didn't, you know, if he gave me a high score and they did a lousy job, they knew it. You know, when we respected each other.
Hmm.
Or is it, you know, I mean, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir. That's really, really.
We knew who was the best work,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what those old guys thought.
Wow, that's really cool.
We got it. Yeah, it was very cool.
So what about the, do you remember anything about the Olympic Project for Human Rights and the Harvard Crew Letter?
No, never heard of it.
Okay, so, all right, that's fine then. We'll just, that's not a problem. What about the, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this correctly, but there was a massacre about 10 days before in Mexico City, Tlatelolco? Tlatelolco, where there were some student protests and violence and ended up with people getting hurt a few days before the start of the games. Do you remember anything about that?
Boy, you know, I may have some vague recollection of something like that happening, but
mm-hmm.
it's pretty out there. Not too much, huh?
That's not a problem, no. I'm sure you were pretty focused, at least.
That's the thing. We were.
What things did y'all do to, I mean, or how did your coach and how did y'all stay focused with, you know, so much going on and being so young and everything being so new?
I never thought about that. I mean, it was just easy, you know, this is what we're doing, you know.
A business trip?
I wouldn't say a business trip. I mean, when you're in the gym, you focus. Outside the gym, you do whatever you want, really.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, we'd go. I remember doing some sightseeing. Well, you know, we competed the first 5 days. So, I guess, you know, after that, you know, we were there for a couple of weeks before the thing ended. So we had a bunch of, quite a few days to mess around.
What kind of things did you do? What were your impressions of the city?
Everybody was really friendly. And I remember I sort of had like a thing for one of the girls on the girls' team. We went to the bullfights with her, and my parents went down there, and I think took me out to see those Aztec or Mayan pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool. I can't remember much else. I just remember walking around and hearing everybody speaking in all these odd languages, and it just was really, really bizarre. You know, from walking around in high school and hearing the same thing every day.
I understand.
You know, seeing the guys with their turbans on their heads, and, you know, I mean, you know, people just, you could tell people, like, actually thought different from different parts of the world. They weren't thinking the same things we were thinking.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Except when we went to the gym. Inside the gym, we thought the same. That was the incredible thing.
That is incredible. That's very cool. What about some of the venues and the?
If you look at that thing on the opening ceremonies, which I never noticed, because my father shot a lot of Super 8 movie then.
Uh-huh.
Well, it wasn't like today. And, you know, at the time, when I was 16, I thought, why do you take all this stupid stuff, man? Just get the gymnastics. That's all that counts. But then when I went back to look at it again, when I was about his age, when he actually shot it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was like 40 years old or something, and I looked at all the stuff he had, and I go, wow, look at this cool stuff he got. Like the guy running up the stairs to light the flame, like the Olympic rings mm-hmm. being lifted up in a big balloon, and the doves getting let go and everything. But he shot this sign. There was like a big sign up there, you know, it was what would they call it, like a... I don't know, like a, I guess like an LED lights, you know, that put text on a big giant sign.
Okay.
Black sign, and it said, you know, like the it's not the winning that counts, it's the taking part, it's the struggle, you mm-hmm. know, it's the, you know, kind of the sharing. There's some Olympic saying that's really that he shot a movie of that, and I thought, like, wow, yeah, that was really there in Mexico, and it wasn't anywhere else after that. That was kind of the death of it.
Oh wow. Huh. So do you...
We're real lucky to be there, man. We were the ones of guys who went to Mexico. We were at and I know it's considered to be a lot by a lot of people to be the last Olympics with the true Olympic spirit.
Wow, that's very cool. What, do you remember anything else about
HBO, in fact, HBO made a documentary about that, as a matter of fact. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
They called me up around... That's when I kind of like went through my old films, and it was sometime in the 90s. And that's when I went through and looked at all the old movies to see what I had. Because they made it out of home movies from the athletes of the 1968 Olympics.
Oh, wow.
And their documentary was about how this was the last Olympics with the true Olympic spirit. That was kind of like the purpose of the documentary.
Wow.
Yeah.
What else do you remember about the opening ceremony? Like, we're kind of curious if you even remember, you know, the column and row you're in, or if you, wow. you know, any specifics, or just any other impressions that you had about the opening ceremonies, just because there's such a, like you said, it's a coming together of cultures.
You know, I said, one thing I remember, I thought, well, this is, you know, kind of corny thing to do and everything, but I remember, like, lining up in this hallway outside and getting ready to march in, and I heard the sound of the crowd through the tunnel, and it just got louder and louder. It was just, wow. It was, like, amazing. I mean, it was like, it really kind of took me away off. You know, I remember feeling like I wasn't even, like I was just floating, not even walking, like I had no weight in my body. Just like I heard this sound, it was such a roar, it just came through this tunnel. We went out there, and in this giant arena, it was like, holy man. I mean, it was really spectacular.
Wow. That's unimaginable. That's incredible.
I can remember exactly what that felt like this day. Yeah, it was wild. But, well, this is kind of corny, marching out there and all. Because I was only 16. I was a kid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I went out there, I was like, you know, I heard this sound. It's coming through this tunnel. And all of a sudden, it got loud. I mean, it was really wild. It was really bizarre.
That's awesome. Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty neat.
And so you said so y'all competed the first 5 days.
Yeah.
What, did you have anything that you know how some people have?
We did compulsories one day, and we did optionals. But we did compulsories one day, then the girls did compulsories. Then they had us do, it was 4 days. Compulsory, optional, compulsory, optional. Then mm-hmm. finals, that's it.
Oh, okay.
5 days. So, yeah.
Did you have any little rituals or you know, certain things you did, like, right before competition or anything, just to, you know, some people will, I don't know, for concentration, I heard on ESPN, this kind of stuck in my head, one guy would, like, paint his fingernails before the game just to, with a clear coat, just to focus and concentrate. I mean, I know that's kind of a different ritual, but did you have anything that you would do to zone in?
Nope. Just, you know, I would think through before I'd go up, I'd, you know, imagine myself doing the routine in my head. That's about it.
Did,
you know, just go through what I'm going to do and how it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be it.
Did you guys have other coaches other than your gymnastics coach? Because, you know, some people are told through sports psychologists, you know, to do that visualization, or you just did that yourself because that's what helped you succeed.
I forgot who told me to do that, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if I thought of that or somebody told me to do that. I can't remember.
That's all right. I'm just curious. There's a lot of...
We didn't really have, like, formal coaching in as they do today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't really... You know, I mean, there was a guy who actually the guy who coached the 68 Olympic team lived nearby, where I lived in the valley, and we used to go work out with a group of guys. We're going to go to the Olympic trials, but it wasn't like a formal gym or anything. We'd go to like Monroe High School on a Sunday or something, or we'd go somewhere else, UCLA on a Saturday. You know, we'd go to, you know, Valley's Junior College on Wednesday night or something. And that's how we did it. Because there was no private gymnastic clubs like today. It's a business.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was free. Then it was free back then, you know. I actually remember one day, I actually got together, somebody called me from the 64 Olympic team. They were going to have a lunch, you know, like a meeting. And the 68 Olympic team coach was there. And he's 80 now.
Mm.
And we met about 3 months ago. I asked him if he remembered, because I remember one time, like, the gym wasn't open where we went, so we did floor exercise routines on the football field.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we were tough back then, man.
Did they have the springy floors back then?
No.
Okay.
No.
Wow. That's... but doing it on the field, divots and everything, huh?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I competed in high school. You know, they still had high school gymnastics in Los Angeles back then. It was big, man. It was really exciting. I mean, high school, L.A. City Finals was like a big deal.
Really?
Oh, man, yeah. They'd have it at a college and full sold-out crowd and everything. And I mean, it'd be really wild.
How did you fare in those?
Yeah, floor routines on the wood floor.
Oh, wow.
The wood floor in the gym.
Huh, how did you fare at those? I mean, so you competed at the Olympics and then went back and then competed in the city finals?
Yeah.
How did you do well there?
In the city finals?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I actually, I won just about every event, actually.
Oh, wow.
In fact, they changed the rules because I won the team, too, because there was one other guy from my high school that was on there. He was a ring specialist, and he had third place. So the way they counted who wins the team is first place is 5 points, second place is 4 points, third place is 3 points, you know, like, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
right? Fifth place is 1 point. So I got about four or five first place, but I won the team title for my school. So they changed the rules for the next year. You know, then 7 years later, they dropped high school from gymnastics because of Proposition 13, or that's what it was.
Mm.
Prop 13, I believe it was called. or property taxes, or people got a break on property taxes.
That's a shame.
All these massive swindlers, just like that, they're all gone.
Oh.
Yeah, it was too bad.
How was the competition, the high school finals, compared to the Olympics? I mean, I can imagine what I might feel like, but I'm not actually sure. I mean, were you able to? Was it kind of like, okay, here we go, I already did the Olympics, or, you know, were you able to really get amped up for it?
Oh yeah, man, you want to impress the girls and all that stuff. That's fun. Everything I did, I wanted to do good. I wanted to do well, and it was all a performance. You know, and that's from my peers. You know, the friends around here. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
No, that was great. I loved doing that.
That's awesome. So what about
a blast, man? I always loved. I mean, I loved doing it. I love competing.
Mm-hmm. Do you still compete today, or are you involved much in gymnastics? I think I saw a video or something that said you were like 57, still swinging on some parallel bars.
I'm 60 now. Actually, on my 60th birthday, I did an exhibition. It was May 20th.
Oh, wow. Like,
a couple weeks ago, right?
Oh, wow.
I did a full twisting double back off the high bar.
Say that again. What was it?
I did a full twisting double backflip off the high bar.
Oh, my.
And I don't know how many 6-year-olds can do that. But the guy actually asked me to do it. Like, cause I teach these kids. I teach part-time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my main profession, but I go in and teach this boys' team. And I teach one little recreational girls' class, too, which is a blast.
Mm-hmm.
I really look at it a lot differently now than I, you know, did. I taught kind of was my main thing when I quit competing. And I didn't do it for a number of years. And I went back and started doing it again. And really have a different outlook completely on it now.
How so? I mean, could you explain? Could you go deeper with that a little bit?
Well, for one thing, I feel like it's just a real gift for me to be able to do it at all at this age.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at the kids in a different way. How much it's, you know, it's for them. You know, I'm really like trying to feel how they're. I can really kind of feel how they're feeling. You know, when they do it, like if, say, some kid doesn't have the same ability as another kid, how, you know, I try to really figure out what's going to make him feel good
mm-hmm.
about being there. You know, I mean, I'm just trying to make the best experience possible for these kids to make them, you know, enjoy what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the main thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, really, I was surprised how much of a different outlook I would have going back to teach. So it opens up like a door, kind of like a door of perception, kind of different.
Really?
I can't describe it completely, but the guy who owns the gymnastics school said, "Hey, we're having this, this exhibition, you know, Sunday, and it was Wednesday, and you're the only guy in shape. You're the only coach in shape." You know, are you going to do something again this year? I did something last year, and I kind of trained for it last year. And I thought, you know what? That's kind of a challenge. What if I could do a full twist double back off the high bar with only 3 days? So I practiced and did it. It felt really good, too.
I bet.
Like,
wow.
I was 20 years old again, man. I overflipped it and everything. It was great. It was fun.
That's incredible. Wow. Huh. Well, okay. Well, I'm gonna go back and ask you a little bit about the actual events again, or at least
sure.
when the games were going on. What about kind of your accommodations in the Olympic Village? Do you remember maybe who you roomed with, or kind of how the rooms were, or do you have any memories about that?
Not too much. I think we were like real high up, you know, in the like on the 30th floor or something.
Oh, wow.
And it was like probably about, you know, five beds in the same room or something. And we'd walk down somewhere, and the cafeteria was some separate building. We'd go there, and they had, you know, good food, you know. We didn't eat that much because we're gymnasts, don't eat a lot, you know, because got to stay light.
Mm. So y'all made a concerted effort to really not eat that much?
Oh, yeah. Oh, huh. Of course. Yeah. Well, the more weight you got, the harder it's to lift it, you know?
Right. It's just every time I watch the Olympics or any type of gymnast, everyone's just so ripped and, you know, so muscular. So, yeah, I'm sure you're right. I'm not questioning you at all, but it's just I never thought about it like that. I just figured, oh, well, maybe these guys' genes are just kind of small, but, man, that's a lot of discipline.
Well, you know, and I still, you know, to this day, you know, I mean, it's kind of like what you learn, and one thing kind of carries through your life. And if I'm at a good weight and a good physical condition, I feel mentally alert and more on in everything I do.
Huh.
You know, I mean, if I feel like I eat too much, I don't eat. I mean, I'm really careful what I eat, and I don't eat. I try to eat the best things possible to feel as good as I can, because I know, you know, the sharper I am, the more productive I can be, and the happier I'll be.
That's awesome.
I was trying to eat just right.
Great, cool. So you said that you keep up with your teammates.
Some of them, not all of them, but some of them.
Okay, anyone, so what guys did you really forge good relationships with? And, you know, while you were there and through your Olympic experience?
Well, Dave Thor was the one guy.
Mm-hmm.
That was the guy who told me also who, you know, you should keep trying. Because you'll make it the next Olympic team.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one guy that went in that earlier competition. He's that guy, and we've been friends throughout the years. And the guy who got kicked off the team, Jim Culhane, you know, he made the 72 again. He's a good friend still.
Mm-hmm.
And who else on that team? That's about it, really. I mean, I saw Jack Beckner, who was the coach, a little while ago at that lunch, as I told you.
Right, right.
And Richard Lloyd was a really good friend, but he died some years back. Some kind of machine shop accident or something.
Oh, wow.
Got in his eye and, like, punctured something in his brain. I don't know what happened exactly, but he died. And he was very cool. Who else? I was, you know, good friends with Fred Roethlisberger back then, but haven't really been in touch with him lately. One guy just died over New Year's Eve, Kennedy Allen. I'm a friend of mine who was his college coach from the 64 Olympic team, who was the guy who coached me when I was about 12 years old. We went and saw him in the hospital right before he died.
Mm.
So, about it.
It's funny you mention all these people, because there's a photo that we kind of wanted to know a little bit about. It shows Sidney Freudenstein, Fred, you said.
The one on the Mexico sign?
Yes, sir. Yeah, so we're...
That's the one I sent that photo.
Right. So we're curious about that, especially, I mean, you know, kind of how it came about, why y'all did it, and... why y'all were wearing Adidas rather than Puma?
Oh, man, I can't answer that question.
Okay, we're just curious. Someone, I mean, you know us academics, we'll look at every little thing, but how did that picture come about?
I'll tell you, there's a guy named Glenn Sunby who had a magazine, and he said he wants to take a team picture of you guys. So down by that sign. So he had us all line up in front of the sign, and we thought, that's kind of boring. Let's do some stuff up here, man. We'll make our own shot up. So we made up our. So what do you? We just all figured out how to make it look like a pretty cool thing, you know. Like one guy does one thing in the middle, you know. One guy's a plan. One guy's a straddle. Dave does a Y scale. Sid and I did handstands, and I thought we made that sign look better.
It looks really cool, actually. That's a really cool picture.
That was our idea. We were, you know, gymnastics, creative. You know, we weren't just going to stand there.
And then one of y'all has some sunglasses on, which is just kind of really just sets it off.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like Joe Cool. Too cool for school here in Mexico. It's cool. That's awesome.
Richard Lloyd. Who was that? Let me see it, please. I actually blew that picture up. That's Richard Lloyd, yeah.
I think that's just a cool picture. I mean, it really
was. Richard was that guy who died a long time ago. He was very cool. He was really. He was from Louisiana. There's another picture I have, another team picture I have and we're all standing like kind of attention. And he's finger split like a peace sign.
Wait, I'm sorry. Could you hear that again? It broke up slightly. Could you say it again? I'm
another
sorry.
Picture I have of us. I have it hanging out my wall, like another team picture, and we're just standing there like at attention, right? With the coach and the manager of the team, we're just standing there, and he's with arms at our side, and he's got his hands with a peace sign. Yeah, Richard.
Oh man.
Yeah, Richard was great. He was a lot of fun to hang out with too.
All right, I have some questions about some things that were that we thought were kind of significant at the games. What about banned substances? I mean, were you ever aware of a list of banned substances, or you know, hear rumors, or
no,
nothing about nothing.
Didn't
like
know
that.
About anything. What? I don't know. Like what? Or
I mean, I don't know, like testosterone or anything like that that, you know, some athletes might be using, or y'all heard nothing about it. It was just go out and compete.
We didn't do anything. We never. No.
And, but did anyone ever, no one ever talked to y'all about it or anything?
No, nobody talked, no. I mean, really, we didn't really care about any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to be honest with you, it was you don't want to record this, but this was the 60s, you know. We were all, you know what the 60s were like, right?
Yes, sir. It was an alternative type of time.
Yeah, so we were all more like, we thought like smoking pot was pretty fun.
Right, right.
Yeah, that was about it.
Well, some things don't change.
Like, yeah, no, we really didn't think there was such thing as performance-enhancing drugs for gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you take something that makes you, like speed or something, you're going to get, shake right off the pommel horse.
Right.
Yeah, maybe you'd be stronger on the rings and hold an iron cross, but, as far as balancing in a handstand or something, you don't want to be shaky.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't really think there was anything that would help. I never really thought there was anything that would help you do anything.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
No, we certainly weren't going to smoke pot before we went out there.
Right, right. What about, and I'm sure you've been asked this before, but what about the Black Power Salute? Were you aware that it happened, or did you see it? Where were you, or your thoughts about it compared to then and now? We think that's pretty culturally significant.
Well, I was, I remember where I was. I was in the, I don't know what I had. I think I was getting some. I had some injury or something. I was. I don't know what I was doing in the train. I was in the training room though, and those trainers back then were pretty. I thought one dimensional minded or whatever you'd call it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember he really thought that was like the train. I was sitting there with, and the trainer was in the same room, and he looked at that, and I know he really felt like, oh, that's like. Those guys, he felt disgusted with it, and I thought, like, well, what's a big deal, I mean, what is it affecting, it's just I didn't think it's, if that's the way they feel, it's, I didn't really know what they meant by it, I just thought, hey, we're black and we're here, cool, I mean, I thought that was about it. I didn't really think it was any, I didn't think it was, like, anti-white or anti-anything. I just thought, I think it was like they were proud to be there kind of a thing. That's how I took it, but I don't know. What did they mean by it? I don't really know.
Yeah.
More than that, what did they really mean?
From what some of the videos that we've seen on it and the little documentaries, it was more a response to kind of not having it was a civil rights response, really, especially sending black people over to Vietnam and sending them to war, yet at the same time not granting them the same rights in the United States that every individual is constitutionally supposed to have. So that's my understanding of it.
Well, that was certainly true
at the time,
I think.
That's And so,
I mean,
so
in the 60s, it was still, wasn't there still like a, in the South? I mean, you just can't use the same restroom and same drinking fountain and stuff like that was still pretty prevalent, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. What about in? So you were from California. California has a history of being, you know, progressive. What was there much?
Yeah,
of that
I mean, we didn't really think about it because, you know, I mean, we, you know, we thought, like, you know, Jimi Hendrix and, you know, Marvin Gaye and, you know, all that stuff was cool. So what's the difference? You know, we really didn't. There was a big generation gap, you know, between, you know, I think, you know, my parents grew up in the Depression, and they were taught a certain way about, you know, life. And I understand how it was, you know, for them now more than I did when they were alive. But they grew up with certain prejudices that, you know, we really, my generation really kind of went the other direction then pretty strongly. I think the generation gap in the 60s was probably the strongest it'll ever be in the history of the world.
Really?
Well, yeah. I mean, absolutely.
That's really that's cool. Those are interesting, your thoughts on it. I feel like it's different for every person, and hearing what you know your thoughts about that is really cool. What about the media? Do you remember much about them and your interactions with them, what they were like, or anything like that?
Not specifically at that particular competition, but I remember basically whenever I would do an interview that they would just write what they wanted to. It didn't matter what I said because they never quoted directly. I said, I never said that. Where did they get this stuff? It was so ridiculous. I mean, it really annoyed me. I was really.
Some things don't change.
And actually, I got, you know, they would, you know, I'd win competitions. You know, they'd do the interviews afterwards for television and everything. Mm-hmm. They really didn't like what I had to say anyway, so they didn't show it most of the time. Because I told them, look, the scores are not accurate anyway, so don't even look at the scores. Ooh. You know, this is like, you know, everybody's doing the best they can. This is an art form. This is not, shouldn't be even judged. I was a bit out there for them. I didn't want to show that.
I bet they didn't. Man, that's heavy stuff. What about
I even wrote an article that was in the Gymnastics magazine. That guy Glenn Sunby was his name, who took that picture on the Olympic sign. And he was really a really great guy, actually. And he was pretty open. I wrote an article with, at one point, and it was published in the magazine. It was called Gymnastics Art Form or Trophy Chase.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah.
Do you have a copy of that still with you or anything?
No, I don't think I have, you know, I'll have to look around.
I mean,
I don't know if I do.
That might be something
I'd like to see what I was thinking about that myself.
How old were you when you wrote it?
I was probably like 20. Oh.
Cool.
Maybe 22. I don't know.
Cool.
Probably 20.
Do you remember any record setting?
Yeah, I guess it's easy to say when you're winning everything, you know.
Yeah. It's good to be the king, huh?
Yeah, because I was actually undefeated in the United States for a number of years, from the time I was 17, basically, till the time I quit.
Golly. That and when so how old were you when you retired?
24.
Man, that's to be on top for that long and to do it so quickly when you're young, that is incredible. How did that affect the rest of your life?
Honestly, you don't really prepare for that. As an athlete, it's just kind of like, in a way, it's like death, you know, because you know it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't really conceive of what that's like. And when you start so young, you know, I mean, 9 years. I mean, I competed internationally 9 years. And I did gymnastics for 14 years. I started at 10 years old. 14 years is a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're like my age now, it's like, you know. Then it's like not that much longer left on the planet, you know. I mean, because 20 years can go by like a snap, in a way. So, but when you're young, it's a long time, and you never really can. You just can't conceive of it. And I And I always knew when I knew I wasn't going to get better, that would be the time I would stop. Because at those Olympic trials, when I went in 1964, I saw this one guy who was actually the 68 Olympic coach, but I saw him there, and he was in his 30s, and he was going for his fourth Olympic team.
Oh, wow.
And he was a little old, and he looked really old to me. He looked old and tired compared to the other guys, and I thought, I'm not going to be that guy. I'm not going to be the guy where they say, "Wow, he's good," but you should have seen him, man, back when he was, then. I just thought that was, if you don't have anything more to offer, you should start giving back and teaching. So, there was one day when I just knew I wasn't going to get any better, and it was like, one day it's going to go on forever, and then it's over. It was just, and there's no going back. It was really a pretty heavy thing to go through, actually.
Yes, sir.
It was very difficult.
Wow. Did you how did you cope with that?
Not really well, not too well, in a lot of ways. I finally got through it,
Yeah, I understand, I'm not even close to your level, but I played football in college and high school and stuff, so I understand. I wasn't not international or anything, but I do understand, stopping something that you've done for so long and invested your life in, so I kind of understand.
Like, now what, and I started teaching, but it was kind of rough.
Mm-hmm.
I think I kind of like didn't face up to it and drank a lot of alcohol to kind of like hide it for
right.
a while.
Yes, sir.
Like too much, probably definitely too much.
Yeah, it happens to the best of us.
Yeah.
But
I came out on the other side, So.
Yes, sir. Well, it seems like you're doing pretty well. I saw your website for your landscaping company and everything.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't have much experience. I watch HGTV here and there, but your landscapes look really, really good. That's impressive. It really is. So congratulations.
I think the one thing about the gymnastics is that I figure, which I've taught my students that I've taught over the years, and some of them have become very successful in other things. That if you if you can master this, you can master anything.
Mm-hmm.
If you can learn how to focus and be good at one thing, you can be good at anything else because what it takes to get there, and then I felt that really helped me in that career also.
Definitely. So they had some really significant record-setting events like the long jump.
Yeah, but Beeman, right?
Yes, sir. Any of those come to your mind or that were kind of significant to you when you were there?
Well, honestly, I remember that guy doing that. But, for us, gymnastics was like the only sport that mattered.
Mm-hmm.
And the Japanese guys were so phenomenal. I mean, they were so great. I remember going in the gym and being with these guys, and they were like, wow, I was so young, too, being so young. Seeing these Japanese guys, like the best guys in the world, was just phenomenal. Because we didn't have YouTube or any of that kind of stuff in those days.
Right.
Here I am in the same room with these guys, working out in the same gym. Like, what an honor.
Right.
I'm only 16 years old. Actually, I went there when I was 15. I wasn't in Bendy. It was regular 8mm films I took myself of the Japanese guys working out when we were in the gym. And the pre-Olympics were held in the same place a year earlier.
Ah.
Which was, that's the first time I saw the Japanese guys.
Wow.
And, I was like, we're on the same gym. So, wow, look at, I'm in the same gym with this. These are like the guys I respect more than anybody in the world.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's awesome to be in someone's presence like that. That's incredible.
They were so far ahead. They were so far ahead of everybody.
Why was that? I don't know much about gymnastics, so why were they so far ahead?
Well, the way they trained was, and I. I learned this because I went to Japan and trained there for a year.
Mm. When was that?
I went there in 19. I went there the following year.
Oh wow!
They invited me over actually.
Oh, that's incredible! Wow.
Yeah, and I was the only. I was the only Caucasian around. I mean, it was, it was nobody there, and you know, it was amazing. You know, I was there like the first, I think it was a month and a half or something. I stayed with this Japanese family. I take the train to the gym, and I don't know if it was that movie like The Last Samurai.
Yes.
But it was kind of like that, where you know, I was like kind of like the outsider guy in there, polite and everything, even though he was a prisoner and stuff. And then all of a sudden, he was like, one day he was on the team. Right.
Mm-hmm.
One day he was off, and that's how it was with me. You know, There was a school there. I went to the American school, and I'd take the train to the gym, and I'd go home. And all of a sudden, one day, they want you to move into the gymnastic dormitory over here. And so I moved in with them and stayed with them. And all of a sudden, I had a guy who took me around every event, every single day, and told me exactly what to do. All of a sudden, the way I was, you know, like an outsider, and then I was accepted, and I was in the club.
Oh wow.
And it was the most phenomenal thing ever. And their training is, nobody goes in and tries halfway anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just 100% effort every day, every single guy, every day, 100% effort. And every day counts. And it's not like, you know, like you wait for the game, the competition to get close, then you start working out. Every single day counts.
That's awesome.
And it's a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
Every single thing and every day counts. It's just a way of life. It's not like, well, we're going to try and do results-oriented. This is what we do today. And every single, man, it was just like, what a celebration it was.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and actually, probably the greatest, and the coach at the gym where I train was the coach of the Olympic team, and he was also the gold medalist in the all-around in the 64 Olympics.
Really?
And I was there in 1969. Well, Japan won everything in every international competition from 1960 to 1978.
Oh, my.
And I was there right in the middle. And I don't think they'll ever be, I mean, you could have probably knocked out the top 100 guys and started 101 and had started their team there, and they still would have won easily.
Wow.
That's how much better they were. So, I mean, walking into every gym there was just phenomenal. And the last month I was there was training for the 1970 World Championships, and they had the Japanese team there. This was like right in the middle of their like renaissance of gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
And the Olympic team, and they knew I was going to go to the World Championships too, so they had me train with them. So here I'm working out with the best guys in the world with the Olympic coach every single day for like a month and a half. Next up, Tata Sawao, the Olympic gold medalist. Next up, Steve. Next up, Kenmotsu, world champion. Next up, you know, Kasamatsu, they won the next World Games. I mean, that was it. That was a month I got to do that. I mean,
wow.
Those days counted, man.
I bet.
That was it.
So you just came back totally different gymnast, or just better?
Oh, totally different.
Really?
Totally different, yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. That's something that people would give years of their life to do.
Yeah, it's a different world, though. I mean, you have to fit, you know. I would say most American guys wouldn't have fit in.
Really?
They wouldn't have got it.
Hmm.
I mean, they didn't. I loved it that much where I could handle it. You know, you gotta, you know, get up when it's snowing out and go outside and exercise every day when it's still dark out.
Mm.
And that kind of stuff. Does how many guys want to do that?
Right.
Whether you got a competition the next week or not.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get better, so it was never work to me, so I loved doing it.
That's incredible. That's awesome. That's so cool. All right, so we're kind of getting to some of the last questions. What about the closing ceremony? I mean, how, or did y'all, you stayed the entire Olympic Games?
No, I don't think I went to the closing ceremonies.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why I didn't, but I don't think I did.
Hmm. It's all good. I'm sure
you... I don't know why. I can't tell you.
Huh. So what about then after...
I remember in Munich, I didn't even want to go to the opening ceremonies because Munich was such a weird... feel. Munich just felt totally different.
And I know you kind of talked a little bit about that with the spirit of it, because we're interested in comparing and contrasting those two anyway. Could you go into a little bit more detail about that?
Well, I remember, you know, going into Munich, you know, here we were going to the Olympics again, right? And I remember Mexico being so great. And then we go to Munich, and I remember going into this concrete tunnel, and it felt really cold. I just had this bad feeling. And I remember having our bag searched and everything. And I thought, man, this is not cool. I didn't even want to go to the opening ceremonies. Mm. And I remember guys, like, cutting in lines in warm-ups, trying to, you know, get ahead, you know. Like, it's all about real selfish, you know, rather than, like, sharing thing. And I guess I had pretty good sensory perception because, I mean, that's where the guys were assassinated, in the Olympic Village, right?
Right, yeah, that's...
I got out of there, you know. I'll tell you, after we competed, I guess the gymnastics, maybe it's always, or back then at least, it was the first 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was done competing, I got out of there.
Really?
I read about the assassinations, and I thought, well, if I got 3 weeks left, it's no fun being in the Olympics, you know, we're not competing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's it, I'm out of here. And I went, being, you got one of those Eurail passes, and... went to Spain, on the coast. And
oh, wow.
Sightsee, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the only time I ever really got to see Europe like that.
Wow.
Well, tourist.
I can't blame you.
Know. I read about the assassinations. I was in Switzerland.
Really?
Yeah. You heard about that, right?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Why do you think there was such a difference just in 4 years in the Olympics, you know, between the, you know, everyone being... just understanding one another turned to selfishness and so much. Because I have no answer for it. I'm just curious if you have any thoughts.
I just think it's kind of like the state of the world, really. I think the Western philosophy is, you know, capitalism and all this, you know, Western philosophy, and, you know, like, which I don't know. I don't know much. I'm not a politician, and I can't say one system is better than another because
mm-hmm.
I don't pay attention even to, you know, political parties. You know, there's less, you know, the population is increasing,
mm-hmm.
there's less room, there's less space for everybody, you know, so it's get your thing now. So rather than sharing, it becomes like, you know, for me first, I'm, you know, look out for yourself first. Worse than that was the one thing in Japan. It was that, you know, and people used to make fun of Japan back then. Oh, they're like robots. They don't even, you know. But the thing is the power of the group was greater than the power of the individual.
Mm.
So if you walk into a gym where everybody's trying hard, you're going to try harder.
Right.
To be able to do better because everybody in there. If you go and walk into a gym where everybody's, you know, lazy and not trying hard, it's hard for you to put out 100%.
Mm-hmm.
That was the spirit they had over there. And it's, you know, I just think it's become more of a selfish world than it was then.
That's...
because it was more crowded.
Mm-hmm.
There's less room, I mean.
Yup.
So, it's almost like cheating and... you know, cutting in line and everything. That was, you know, if you can do it, if you benefit by, you know, you know, karma doesn't matter. You know,
I
disagree with. So, I'm old school. You know.
Yes, sir.
Help each other out. It's mm-hmm. a better way to live.
So, what about amateurism? I mean, did you deal with any, like, eligibility type rules? Say, don't take gifts or endorsements or anything where you had to stay amateur status?
Well, you know, I never really had to worry too much about that except for, one time, the Amateur Athletic Union was the governing political party for the gymnastics in the United States
mm-hmm.
at the time, and they used to have these competitions at Santa Monica Beach, and the AAU, they call it, right, Amateur Athletic Union,
mm-hmm.
would, if they didn't sanction a meet, you couldn't go in it, they would disqualify you, and so we used to have these competitions at Santa Monica every year on, like, Labor Day,
mm-hmm.
and it was a blast, man. The girls out there in the bikinis and everything. And, you know, we'd do swinging rings. It was just such a great cultural phenomena to have Santa Monica Beach out there. They'd bring gymnastics equipment out, and the crowd would be out there. And, you know, people would do it in their bathing suits, and we'd do this stuff. And it was just a fun thing to do. And guys would come from all over the country, you know, some of the better gymnasts. But But they said, and I remember one year I wanted to go in, and I was 15 years old. And I remember that the Olympic coach, you know, said, no, you can't go in because they'll disqualify you.
Oh, my.
You won't be able to compete. That really annoyed me to no end. So that was the only time, and that was not about money. That was just, well, it was the money for them.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. You didn't pay them entry fee. They didn't make any money out, so you can't go in, or you're disqualified.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
One time I did a gymnastics exhibition at a high school, and the guy in the bathroom gave me $100.
That's really?
The only time I ever got any money for gymnastics. Yeah, I was in high school. I thought that was pretty cool.
Huh. No, that really is. I mean, who? Jeez. What a. All right, I just have two more questions for you. I know I'm taking your time. So we're just curious, if you had, you know, some just advice, this may seem a little bit cheesy, but if you had advice for, you know, an Olympic hopeful today, anything that just comes to mind that you would definitely tell them?
You mean like a kid? Like a kid coming up?
Or someone you knew had the talent that they could if they wanted to. You know, they could get there if they really wanted to.
I guess I would tell them to try and, think for themselves what they need to do to get better. Don't wait for the coach to tell you what you need to do. Figure it out for yourself.
Hmm.
Because a lot of these kids are spoon-fed today. You know, that's the thing I've just been running into lately.
I understand.
They don't really, you know, and I'm really trying to get them to think on their own. Not rely on coaching, because they're the ones doing it.
Mm-hmm.
If the coach doesn't tell them something, you know, they're not going to get it. So they got to think what their weaknesses are and how to, work on the weak things first. But they gotta know what to work on. They gotta think before they go into the gym what they need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Don't wait for somebody to tell you what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Figure it out. Know what you need to do, so you make sure you get it done, whether the coach tells you to do it or not.
Right. I couldn't agree with you more. Actually, that's really funny. Okay, last one. So. Do you think that the 68 games, or what kind of effect do you think the games had on the world? You know, there was a number of things. We think it's, you know, pretty culturally significant. But in your opinion, you know, nationally or globally, what kind of effect do you think they had?
Boy, I'd like to hear what you thought they did have effect. I thought it would be interesting what you say, but, I mean, boy, I guess I was like kind of tunnel vision into the gymnastics then, but I just thought, I thought there was a feeling of hope, you know, that the world was going to be a better place.
Mm-hmm.
At that time in general in the 60s. And the world would come together more, you know, like it would, hopefully become a more unified world. I mean, I don't know what was your guys thinking on that?
Well, I mean, I'm really curious. Yeah, so we see it, you know, from in hindsight now, you know, so we can, but we think that definitely we think that sports, you know, a lot of people think that sports are just sport, right? And you just go there to watch it and it's spectator, but you know, the people that are in it, a lot of them understand that there's more to it, and that sports are imbued with a number of things. You know, sports are imbued with politics. They really do affect, you know, a lot of folks. And so, you know, we think definitely the Black Power salute, it was a way, you know, center stage. We think that, you know, there's been a lot of articles written about, you know, the Olympics and how people use it to really just make an opinion, make a voice about something. That's why everyone, you know, they have those protest zones now, this, that, and the other. And we think it was, you know, in modern history, maybe one of the most culturally important Olympics. You know, I mean, 72, you know, comes in it's up there too with the assassinations and things that Germany did could have done better, let's put it that way, security-wise, and because there's a really good video about it. I forget the title of it, but they really just go down the list and pretty much use it as a case study of what not to do. But we just...
I didn't really change anything. I mean, the Palestinians and Israelis still fight, right?
Right, exactly. I mean...
But they always have, and they still do, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
didn't help anything.
Right, we just... We
Whereas,
think...
I don't really know how people even look at that. I think at the time, with that Black Power thing was, by white people considered to be a negative thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think now, looking back on it, it's considered to be maybe a positive thing, because civil rights have, gotten better.
Yes, sir. No, we
is that true? Is that?
That's my take on it. We think that sport reflects society in a way. You know, that kind of reflects what was going on in the United States at the time. The same in 72.
Yeah.
You know, the Palestinians in that conflict. So we think that sports really reflect a lot that's going on. And like you said, you know, your difference between 68 and 72. That's probably a pretty accurate reflection of the way things, were going to people, becoming more selfish and the world becoming smaller and people's perspectives. So that's the way we think of it over here. And so I don't know. It's things that we keep ourselves busy with. So.
Yeah.
But Mr. Hug, those are all the questions I have left for you. I really want to tell you how much I appreciate your time and allowing us to talk with you. And personally, I don't think I've ever spoken with an Olympian before, and so for me, it's been an honor. I really appreciate it.
This was my pleasure. But what are you guys going to do with this? I mean, are you actually are you at the school? Are you a student there? What is this? You said it's a school project, or how is this?
So we call it this. Yeah. So I'm a PhD student here. I just finished my first year. This is part of what we call the 68 project, and so we're trying to.
I need that you just picked that Olympics. I mean, I'm honored that you did, and I think I'm sure a lot of the guys from the 68 Olympic team would say you guys picked the right one. I think you did, really.
Yeah, and it's the first one that was held in Latin America too. So I mean, there's a number of things that make it an important event, but so we're collecting, trying to, the ultimate goal is to collect these interviews from as many as possible, as many Olympians as possible, and then maybe if people want to do
Dave Thor, did you talk to him?
I'm not sure if we have or not. Desiree, the girl that you've been emailing back and forth with, she is it. She knows pretty much everything that's going on here, because they've
I know how to get a hold of him if you're having any trouble. I know where he, I just talk to him I talk to him every week probably.
Okay, well I'll be sure, because I'm gonna just tell her after we hang up. I'm gonna email her and just tell her how it went.
He's a really intelligent guy. He probably have a better answers than I would about all this stuff.
Oh, and
my proud thing. He'd probably be a really, he'd be really an interesting guy to talk to. I can
really
say that.
Okay, well, I'll make sure that I tell her that then. I appreciate you.
Dave Thor, he's a very opinionated guy, and he's really. I mean, I guarantee you'd be glad talking to him. It'd be probably more fun than me. I mean, he's really cool.
Cool.
He's very cool.
Cool. I'll pass that along to Desiree then.
Yeah, I would highly recommend it.
Awesome.
And I know his phone number.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, we'll I'll let her know, and then if we haven't gotten him yet, I'm sure she'll probably communicate with you later on down the line.
Okay.
Oh, cool. No, again, thanks so much, Mr. Hug. I really do appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Well, good luck with your project.
Oh, thank you very much. All right.
Is this gonna be published, or how's this gonna?
No,
they're
gonna transcribe it. It's not gonna be published, but it's more or less gonna be kept here in the Stark Center, which is this research center here in Austin. And so, if people want to, investigate certain opinions about, whatever issue in 1968, well, they'll be able to then come in and research, listen to the interviews or read the interviews and see what different people thought, and kind of, synthesize all that information and all those opinions to kind of then kind of recreate history, if you will, based on what everyone thought.
But then you'd have, like, online or anything, huh?
Ultimately, their goal is to have it online, but But I'm not. I don't have the right answer for you right now.
Well, if you do, keep me up to date on that, if you don't mind.
Oh no, definitely. I will. Awesome. We will definitely do that because that's what we want to do. We want to make sure that y'all are really involved in this process. We're not just using y'all and abusing y'all and then letting you go. I mean, this is a real relationship that we're trying to build with the 68 team. So we will keep you in the loop.
Great.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much, and I'm going to let you go now.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Bye.
Bye.